So we've set kind of the benefits. So how do you now set up your initial innovation exercise of the program to start to define what those measures are in terms of how you track whether you're getting the progress that you need? So what are the measurements that you would put into place to know that you're making progress?
Right. I'm not a big fan of one size fits all in general. So I cannot tell you a recipe that will work indiscriminately in any industry, in any corporation. In general, strategy needs to stay the same, but tactics need to adapt. So in terms of measuring your innovation effort, in general, people need to remember one thing. One size fits all doesn't work. So you need to adapt your metric system, your KPI system, to the maturity level of the ventures that you're using the metric system on. Basically, you should never judge an early stage startup or startup idea with the financial KPIs that you would normally put under a scrutiny a more advanced project or product team. So the idea is that you need to correlate the product life cycle with the KPIs. So the KPIs need to change as the maturity picks up, as traction picks up. Early stage, you'll be more interested in, for example, the number of experiments the team has done. How many customers they've interviewed, how many learnings did they get? What was the cost of learning? What was, for example, the cost of an experiment? Like, these are some things you need to ask, but as things progress, as things mature, these things become less and less relevant. I've seen from experience, I was running a product team in Asia for a corporation, which I'm not going to name. In the first 3 months of the project, our experiment velocity was 2.5 experiments per week. But as things advanced, after another 3 months, as our experiments became more complex, our experiment velocity dropped to about 0.8 experiments per week. Initially, it was 2.5 per week. Later, it became 0.8 per week. So basically, our experiment velocity dropped significantly, but that was not a bad thing because our experiments got more complex, so we require more development behind the experiments and all those things behind complex experiments. Our learning velocity pretty much stayed the same, but now we started asking ourselves other questions, like, for example, what is our customer acquisition cost? What is our cost per click? Like, things that we didn't ask initially in the first three months when we were basically interested in, for example, how many customers have we spoken to? How many prototypes have we done last week and whatnot?
No, that makes sense. There's, I agree that a lot of, you know, kind of the later stage metrics, right? So once you go into starting to validate engagement, for instance, in MVP, right, then you have much more tangible progress around, you know, how much, you know, what your returning visits are, daily visits, all this stuff, right? Or whatever the context may be. But going to a kind of an earlier stage portfolio when you just have ideas, I tend to believe, and I want to get your reaction to this, I tend to believe that, I mean, certainly you should and can and should measure the activity, right? Which is, you know, the number of experiments teams are running and all of the other things that show that there's activity. But I feel like the ultimate value that you're getting at this point is that there's no guarantee you're going to go forward with any of these projects. I'm guessing the only valuable thing you're getting out of it is validated learning, right?
Sure. Meaning,
to me, that is the unit of value creation. I'd love to get your reaction to that because I always come back to this one point, which is the only thing you have at the end is learnings, right? Are those valuable, right? So
one of the biggest and the KPIs I always love to put forward when I do this kind of work is cost of learning, yeah. Right? So how much are we learning with every dollar spent? Because mm-hmm. Historically, larger organizations are poor learners. Like, they usually just cram a lot of people into a room. They give them ginormous budget only to launch something that doesn't work. And then they say, oh, yeah, but we learned that actually the market doesn't want that. Well, my question is, how much did you spend to learn it? Did you spend 1 million or did you spend 1,000? Because it's a big difference, right? The success in the future will come from those companies that are able to learn fast, but also from the companies that are able to learn in a parsimonic way, basically without spending all those resources on when they could have done something, let's say, better in terms of the entire economy of the things.
Excellent. That's great. That wraps up this particular topic. Okay, good. Let's now go on to the next topic, which is around, let's say that you're starting to get some initial returns, right? Initial measurements. And let's take, for example, what you just brought up around costs per learning, right? Give me a kind of example of what that could be in maybe one of your client situations, and then talk about what do you do with that, right? So,
yeah. Right. Cost per learning can be anything from learning about a particular demographic behaving in a certain way to a value proposition that you're putting forward, or it can be as complex as, for example, you learn about their behavior when you put them through a funnel in a mobile app or in an online service platform, right? So all these things are learnings. It's really difficult to say what the learning is, but basically you're moving something from the known unknown sphere to the known sphere, if this makes any sense. Also, what's really important for people that apply this is to understand that learnings need to be normalized. If you're in a large organization, like for example, Siemens is, everybody knows about Siemens or Bosch, right? They do anything, for example, Bosch does anything from brakes in cars to, you know, space industry to household appliances, right? Well, you don't need to consider in this case, let's say Bosch, for example, you should not consider cost of learning across the entire organization, because the learnings that, for example, the aerospace unit is making is going to be way more expensive than the cost of, let's say, household appliances department will have, right? So you need to compare apples with apples and peaches with peaches. You should not mix them all together. And after you've identified this, you need to benchmark it. And you need to benchmark it against an industry average, if you have anything like that, or you should benchmark it against other learnings in the similar context. And then you see if that particular product team is learning faster, better, cheaper than the product teams before it.
Excellent. Talk a little bit about the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns, just so in case our audience wanted to know a little bit more about that.
Right. I think it started in 2003, 2004, when Secretary of State, what was his name?
Kissinger. Rumsfeld.
Rumsfeld. Oh, Rumsfeld, right. Rumsfeld, yeah, sorry. Well, Kissinger was way back. Yeah, Rumsfeld. I think Rumsfeld said that there are things you know, things you know you don't know, things you know, and things you don't know. I'm probably now confusing everybody. But the idea is that in any business, there are things that you are certain of, right? So things that you know. And then there are things that you don't know. These are your known unknowns. These are things that you are basically putting them in a sphere, and you want to go and explore those things. These are the things that make you curious. These are the things that pick up your eye when you think about your business. And like, okay, our business will work only if this will happen. Well, do we know about this thing happening? Do we have data to prove it? That's a known unknown. And then, of course, you have the things that you don't know. And this is where people need to be humble. There's a lot of things out there in your business that you don't know. And you should be open and you should be humble and have an eye out for these things when you run your experiments, when you talk with your customers. Try to get those things.
Yeah, and kind of tying it back to this whole idea of the value that you create is around learning. It sounds like some of the surprises, things you didn't know, and kind of the aha moments, I like to say, right? The real insights maybe those should be valued more. So not obviously not all learnings are equally valuable. So maybe that's a great framework to map what it is that you didn't even know you didn't know that you learned.
Right. They should be valued as a premium. The unknown unknowns should be valued as a premium when you do your learning cycles.
No, excellent. Very good. Very good. So I want to kind of zoom out a little bit now. So we've kind of stayed at an individual kind of a idea or a concept or a project level, but let's take now a whole portfolio of ideas in, you know, kind of, let's say that you have a mix of horizon 1, 2, 3 kind of ideas that you're experimenting with. Tell us kind of, is there kind of thinking behind how do you value the return on your overall portfolio, if you will, now?
Right. So again, going back to the idea of your KPIs needing to change as the maturity of your portfolio increases. Basically, the best way to measure, of course, the best way to measure the return of your innovation activity is to measure how much money you've made. And there's a lot of companies out there that are actually incentivizing their executives to take more risk. I think Cisco and 3M do something like measure their executives against the KPI that says something around 25% of their annual revenue should come from products that they launched in the past 3 or 5 years. That basically allows an executive in charge of a Horizon 1 business unit to still let people experiment and come up with new ideas in Horizon 3 and Horizon 2. Initially in Horizon 3 and then moving them gradually to Horizon 2. And in terms of thinking about KPIs and measuring innovation, definitely Horizon 1 should be around the efficiency, should be around profitability, should be around ROI, NPV, return on net assets, and all those really nice accounting KPIs, right? Like pure accounting KPIs. But as we move towards Horizon 3, their roles should diminish. Basically, in Horizon 2, we have to have a mix of these financial KPIs and then something that we in the book call innovation accounting, basically non-financial KPIs, exactly what we've discussed earlier. Learnings, knowledge to assumption ratios, and all that stuff. And as we move into Horizon 3, the financial KPIs will play a neglectable role.
Absolutely, great. I want to kind of go back to this, you know, earlier discussion we had about what are your objectives for your innovation, you know, efforts, right? So clearly, mm-hmm. there's a financial set of objectives, but there's also what we said was the cultural, objectives around engagement, better employee satisfaction, right? And so forth, keeping your top people together and all of that stuff. With respect to those set of objectives, is there thinking around how we should measure how we're moving or are getting progress along that front, you know, as you're doing these things?
I'm not an HR specialist, but what I've seen and I have used in some of the engagements I've done in the past. Usually, it's really nice to do a survey within your workforce, like an NPS, for example, with work satisfaction. But also, not just that, but you can always look, right? You can do that, but that's not going to validate entirely if your ecosystem is healthy or not. Another way to do it is to look at who initiated the ideas that your ecosystem generated. Were those ideas generated top-down or they were generated bottom-up? Because usually if they are generated top-down, people are not necessarily inclined or motivated or really motivated to work on them. Sometimes people want to have ownership of their idea, right? So you're a low-level employee and you are happy that your boss just allowed you to go there and take your enthusiasm, take your team and start building something. So if you're able to track where the idea came from, that's also an indicator of how healthy your innovation ecosystem is. So not just the NPS. You need to think of measuring everything you do in your activity as the GPS in your car. So the GPS in your car is not using just one satellite to pinpoint your location, but is using an array of satellites, like 3 or 5. In the same way, you should have 3 or even 5 avenues of validating if your activity, if your innovation ecosystem is functioning.
Great, great. And let me ask one more question on this front. So now that, clearly what you're saying is that where the idea is coming from has an effect, right? Right. How multifunctional teams, I think you inferred, has to have an effect, right? I think that people who are actually participating in innovation will clearly have an effect, right? But I also feel like there's a broader sentiment you can create, right? Not everybody has to work on the innovation, but as long as they feel like there's a voice they have, right, that their ideas matter and that it's more flat and collaborative. So talk a little bit about that and how you'd go about measuring that.
Well, that's really difficult to measure, and I think that's more a qualitative type of measurement rather than a quantitative one. It's more towards how do people feel about it, and that should be measured in a survey form. That should be measured again with MPS rather than with exact concrete numbers. Another way to measure it, you're talking about the team, you're talking about multiple teams working together, where you should also look at the diversity of those teams. And you should look at how diverse is each individual team. We're talking here about organizations that have offices on pretty much every time zone, right? And what's really interesting is that these organizations consider themselves to be diverse organizations because, hey, we have office in Japan, we have office in India, we have office in Israel, and then we have an office in the United States. Yes, you are an international team. Yes, you are a multicultural team, a multicultural organization. But at individual team level, it might be that the Israeli team is just working with Israelis, and the Indian team is just working with Indians, and the Japanese team is just working with Japanese, and that is going to take a toll on the innovation. Right? It's been proven that mixed and diverse teams perform better, and I think this is also something that the organization should measure. But this is something that, again, it's difficult to put a mathematical KPI behind. It's really difficult to say, hey, this is the formula. Tell me how many people. I can tell you exactly how your team is going to behave if I know how many, what was the diversity degree in your team. So, again, going back to your initial question, I think that this is a quantitative set of KPIs, and they should be treated accordingly. They are useful, but they are difficult to compute.